We are now ready for the fourth and final argument on today's calendar. The case is A24-1329, Dave Knutson Siding LLC versus Dustin Fetter and others. The appellant is Lisa Thostenson. In this appeal, the respondent elected to not file a brief pursuant to our rules. The court issued an order scheduling oral argument to be heard or to be presented only by the appellant. So we will hear oral argument for up to 15 minutes from appellant's counsel, and then the matter will be submitted. Counsel, please state your name and the name of your client or clients, and then you may begin.
May it please the court. My name is Scott Peitzer, and I represent the appellant, Lisa Thostenson. This case boils down to the grammatical structure of seven words in Minnesota General Rule of Practice 521B1. Every opposing counsel or self-represented litigant. And the sole issue before the court is whether the word opposing modifies both of the terms of the conjunction that follows it. And the series modifier rule says yes, it does. That rule is very straightforward. It's when a modifying word is followed by a series of nouns to which the modifier can apply equally, then the natural linguistic construction is to apply that modifier to each noun in the series. And that comes from most recently articulated, I believe, in the Estate of Pollock case cited in the brief. Here we have a modifier.
Can I stop you there just for a minute? And it's kind of maybe a small point, but I'm wondering, does the case law applying that canon, the series,
the series modifier.
Right. Has it been applied to a series of two nouns or verbs, or has it been applied only to language where there's three or more, a longer series, in other words?
It typically does apply. I mean, there aren't very many cases applying it, but it typically does apply to a longer series, but the reasoning applies just as much to any series of two or more. I think that...
Don't disagree with that. I'm just wondering how it's been applied.
Yep. Correct. It's the cases, Pollock, I believe, was, three terms, but there have been a few with more, but... Two, I don't think would change the analysis. We have a short series. It's a two-term disjunctive conjunction composed of the noun counsel and the noun phrase self-represented litigants. And opposing can apply equally to each term, either opposing counsel and opposing self-represented litigants.
And are you assuming every also applies to both terms?
Yes, every is sort of the outermost it's a quantifying determiner of the remainder of the series. So it applies to every opposing counsel and every opposing self-represented litigant. We're just going to distribute from the outward in, just like as if this was just like algebra. And what we have here is it's an undivided grammatical structure. There's no punctuation or distinct separation between either of the conjoined terms on either side of the or.
Is the case law about notice of appeal and serving parties on notice of appeal, is that instructive to our analysis for this rule?
Yes, Your Honor, I think it's very instructive. I think that the...
Is there any difference in your mind between opposing versus adverse?
I think that it is a distinction without a difference. It just means the same thing. The case law and I think the structure, the policy of the rule focuses on the relationship of the parties to the matter being brought up, whether on appeal from conciliation court to district court or from district court to this court.
So that gets me to the question of how case law has defined an adverse, because it looks to a party who would be prejudiced by a reversal or modification of an order, award, or judgment. And so it's not just that I'm the plaintiff and you're the defendant. You have to look down into what are we talking about here, and if we were to reverse the order, how would that prejudice the other parties? And here you've got a judgment against three people, and I'm assuming a reversal would mean a judgment against two people, and that seems like it could be prejudicial to the other two.
Your Honor, it would be exactly the same as if a judgment in the district court was appealed up here. The other two people had the opportunity to file their own notices of removal, just as a party in the district court would have the opportunity to file their own notices of appeal, and those would be separate appeals that would then be presumably brought in to get consolidated as related appeals, but they're all individually responsible for the to appeal their own judgment. Here,
the other two parties might be just fine with the idea that if there's three of us here and we're going to have a fight about who's responsible, we're okay with that, so we're not going to appeal it. But if one of the three appeals, that could prejudice the other two, because now it's 50-50 versus a third when you're paying out that judgment and having that fight.
Correct, and that is a possibility, Your Honor, but that's also a possibility that the rule has contemplated. The commentary to Rule 521 says that it is each party's responsibility, that they have to take action or the judgment becomes final to them. And one party taking action doesn't change whether the other parties have their own independent obligations to take action to affect the finality of that judgment with respect to them individually.
But they might want to participate and say, no, she should still be on the hook because she affirmatively said we affirmatively told her whatever. I don't know what the evidence would be, but keep her on the hook.
Well, I think
it's like, we're fine. We understand we're on the hook for this amount, but she should be on there too.
Well, I think, Your Honor, in that case, there would need to be a cross-claim for either for contribution or something of that nature. But we don't have that here. We just have three parties who have been found liable, but there have been no claims across the table between them. Then there would be an opposing, if there was a cross-claim, there would be an opposing party here, and they would require notice. But the absence of that, I think, cuts in the opposite direction. And it would also cause some real anomalies when you're looking at the next provision of the rule in those kinds of situations, because the next 521B2 really makes very little sense unless opposing modifies both terms, because if you have a situation like that where you have where you are unable to locate and serve your co-defendants, then you would be out of luck because an affidavit can be filed in lieu of service if the removing party can't locate an opposing party, and it can be filed in lieu of service if the removing party can't locate the opposing party's lawyer. But under the next provision of the rule, you would not be able to file an affidavit in lieu of service if you can't locate a co-defendant. Whether or not even if you did not have a cross-claim against them or they didn't have a cross-claim against you, you would just be out of luck under the next provision of the rule. You would just be unable to remove even if they're not opposing.
Counsel, in Rule 521, paragraph D, it says when all removal documents have been filed properly and all requisite fees paid, the removal is perfected, and the court shall issue an order vacating the order for judgment and conciliation court as to the parties to the removal. What is a party to the removal? What does that phrase mean?
That is a party who either has filed the removal or is an opposing party. And that is actually discussed pretty specifically in the advisory committee comments.
Which says that the order is only vacated as to what? As to whom?
As to the parties who have removed.
As to the parties who have removed.
Correct. Which would be the, let's see if I can find the exact wording. Oh, yes. So Rule 521D is amended to clarify its application in a situation where one of several co-parties, either co-plaintiffs or co-defendants, removes or appeals a conciliation court decision while another party does not take that action. The committee believes that the conciliation court judgment should become final against any party who does not remove the case and in favor of any party against whom removal is not sought.
Okay, it becomes final as to any party who did not file for removal. So if you are you're not an opposing party, but you don't file for removal, someone else does, the order becomes final as to you because you didn't file for removal.
Correct, Your Honor. So you're in the exact same position as you would have been if nobody had filed for removal. The only difference is that if you do file for removal, it becomes vacated as to you. And if you could file for removal, you have that choice. You can join in the removal or you cannot. And if you don't, it becomes final as to you.
And a person who is appealing to this court, they're in the same position?
Yes, Your Honor.
They don't get notice of the appeal, or do they get notice of the appeal?
They would not be required to get notice of the appeal because they would not be an adverse party that would be required to be served with that notice.
So they are on their own in that context. A self-represented person in that context is on his or her own or its own to file their own appeal.
Correct, Your Honor.
Without the need for notice of an appeal that's been filed.
If they're not an adverse party, then no. Then they're responsible for filing their own notice and filing a notice of a related appeal, and this court may consolidate those appeals or not.
And then you're just reading the word opposing to simply mean what side of the V you're on?
I'd say not necessarily what side of the V, but with respect to, as Judge Schmidt mentioned earlier, you have to look at the claim. I mean, if you're on the same side of the V, but this is a cross claim, then you would be opposing with respect to that.
Is it problematic for us that the co-defendants were not served in the appeal to this court that we have now?
No, Your Honor, for the exact same reason that it was not problematic that they weren't served with the notice of removal. The rules simply don't require it because they're not adverse parties as defined by the rules. The rules do not require them to be notified of this either.
It seems that the district court's order reads the word or in the disjunctive as an and. Every opposing counsel must be served and every self-represented litigant. And that's the essence of the district court's order, yes? You have to serve everybody.
Sort of, Your Honor. I think that the district court applied, yes, you do have to serve everybody, even though that's not what the rule says. It ignores the qualifier and does not distribute that qualifying word. Opposing.
Well, doesn't it ignore the word or to the extent that or is a disjunctive? You do one or the other?
The case, I think that here or is, it's a disjunctive conjunction. It is two terms joined by a single copula, and whether it's or and, I don't think really makes a difference here because what we're talking about is the grouping of the terms within on either side of that.
And doesn't our appellate rule use the word and? You must serve this one and this one?
I do not recall the specifics of whether it's or and, but I in the appellate rule, but I think that structurally and functionally, it's equivalent. It's you need to serve the party that is going to be prejudiced if this is flipped on whether it's by this court or by the district court, and the party that's going to be prejudiced by that is the party that is the one who won below, not necessarily the one that is sort of parallel to this to this removal or this appeal. It is. It's just it's. They're in the same position, whether or not they're in no worse, really in no worse position than they would have been otherwise. Whereas the party who won below is, and I see that my time is up. If you have any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
It appears there are no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Peitzer, for your argument. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion in writing within 90 days.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And that is the final case on today's oral argument calendar, so the court is now adjourned.